Hey History is a podcast all about Australian history, where the kids ask the questions. I'm your host, Axel Clark. In each episode of Hey History, we'll hear stories and answer your questions. Questions like,
what's the gold rush?
What was life like then? What kind of food would you have?
Did Aboriginal people mine gold too?
How did Australia change with people coming from everywhere?
And at Hey History, we don't just stop when we get an answer, because
how do we know what really happened? And is there another side to the story?
In this episode, we will go camping on the gold fields of Ballarat with thousands of other people. It's all about the gold rush. You can listen to this episode straight through, or stop halfway if you'd like. I'll tell you when we've reached halfway.
Hey History.
Let's go. In the Hey History podcast, the kids ask the questions, and I'm a kid, so I've got a question for you. Have you ever been camping? In a campground or a school camp with lots of people? How was it?
It's really fun. The only downside to that is when it's raining.
When I went camping with my family, we all went in this gigantic tent, and it was so squishy. And when we walked in, we all got sand in it. So when we went to sleep, there was all sand. I'd rather just sleep in the car.
Camping is really, really cool, but sometimes it could be really bad if you're like allergic to mosquitoes or if you're not really an outside person.
Yeah, you are outside a fair bit when you go camping. And the reason I asked you about camping is that camping was big in the gold rush, like really big. And thinking about camping today might help you imagine what it was like back then. You know what else can help us imagine life in the gold rush? A visit to the classrooms of Prez Hill Primary School and Westbourne Grammar School in Melbourne.
We're on Wurundjeri country.
We're on Bunurong land.
Hello from Victoria.
A lot of gold rush history happened in Victoria. What can you guys tell us about the gold rushes?
There were two very famous gold rushes. One was in America and the other one was in Australia.
People came from everywhere all around the globe because gold was worth a lot of money since it was a very rare material.
Some got really rich, some went flat broke.
There were probably a few hot spots where there was lots of gold, and I think people would argue about the places where they were mining since some places would definitely have more gold than others.
It was multicultural, but not in the way that Australia is now. A lot of cultures and religions weren't accepted in the gold fields.
There was discriminations and not everyone used to get along.
These are all really great points about the gold rush.
Hey, I've got a question.
Who first found the gold?
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gold found in Australia. February 1851, first official gold discovery near Bathurst, colony of New South Wales. June 1851, gold found in central Victoria. Thousands flock to strike it rich and find their fortune. Gold fever hits Australia. Gold, the rush is on.
Newspapers all over the world said that in Victoria, gold was really easy to find, so everyone got gold fever. But they weren't sick with a fever in bed. Gold fever means they were super excited at the idea of becoming instantly rich. And getting rich wasn't always about buying fancy things or having a giant house. Most people back then didn't have much, and gold was a chance to change their lives. Would you leave home and go across the world to find gold? Would you get gold fever?
Yes, I would. If I would go across the world and go see new places. Plus, I'll be rich and I can buy lots and lots of meals.
I would probably, not go because I don't want the chance to, not get any money.
It's a little bit of adventure. I could be super rich and be fantastic.
I wouldn't. It's because if you get too rich, you'll forget about your family.
I would, but I would use the money to bring my family to the place I'm going away to.
Melbourne was the closest city to the goldfields in Victoria. Let's go back in time to Melbourne in the 1850s. Here's historian Fred Carr.
Arriving from Europe or the Americas and arriving at what was then called Port Phillip, it would have been an extraordinary attack on your senses. And a weird collection of languages.
Jo-san.
Chiodich.
Buongiorno.
Song and dance. Many people getting drunk. Miners came from all across the world, from every nation, including Maori indigenous people from New Zealand and American indigenous people, Russians, Jamaicans. Everybody wanted to come to the goldfields of Victoria.
When first I left old Ireland's shore, the yarns that we were told of how the folks in far Australia could pick up lumps of gold, how gold dust lay in all the streets.
There were no roads. Very few people could afford to buy a horse, so just thousands of people just walking along tracks towards this town called Ballarat.
Black Billy in my hand, I'll travel the bushes of Australia like a true-born Irishman. We made our way into Geelong, then north to Ballarat.
Let's go to Ballarat. It's an hour and a half in a car from Melbourne. Lucky we brought snacks. And we're actually following the same tracks that people walked along to the goldfields. It's quick for us, only an hour and a half. But back then, it took people 3 days to walk there. These dirt tracks were soon packed with people all going to one place, the goldfields. The main places with gold were in central Victoria, near Bendigo and Ballarat.
They knew they were entering Ballarat when they would hear the sound of these gold dishes sifting sand and trying to find gold.
Wow, the sounds of the gold rushes.
The sound of these mining dishes apparently could be heard from 10 miles away. That's how many there were.
You could hear gold pans from 10 miles, that's 16 kilometres, away. Talk about noise pollution. These mining dishes, or gold pans that Fred is talking about, making all that noise, look a bit like a pizza pan. A big, round, metal pan.
It sounds weird, but, like, you could imagine how old it is and how much time it's gone through. Like, maybe even all the gold it's picked up. It would be really cool if you could just see from the pan's perspective and just see what's happened over time.
It would be cool. So, what did happen over time? Let's go back before the gold rush, before colonisation. The Ballarat goldfields are on Wadawurrung country, country that's been lived on and cared for thousands of years by Wadawurrung people. The first colonisers came to central Victoria in the 1830s to farm sheep. Wadawurrung people resisted the takeover of their land, and there was guerrilla warfare for many years. And then, 20 years later, everything changed again.
We made our way into Geelong, then north to Ballarat.
Ballarat in the 1850s, when the gold rush commenced, would have been a very beautiful spot. There were creeks and rivers, flat areas with hills with just the occasional trees on them. A very picturesque and beautiful place. Very quickly, the gold seekers turned what was a beautiful place into a very horrible, smelly place to live. The goldfields very quickly turned into a big mess, essentially.
It's hard to imagine how hectic it was. every week for over a year, 6,000 men, women and children turned up to the Ballarat goldfields. All needing to find somewhere to live, food to eat, somewhere to poo and wee, and somewhere to start panning or digging for gold.
One miner wrote in his memoirs that every tree was cut down, nature was destroyed. The gold miners had no toilets. Everything was just poured into the creeks and the rivers, so they quickly became polluted and people being very, very sick.
No toilets, no showers, and no bookings for your tent. You just turn up and find a spot where you can, if you can, next to the other thousands and thousands of tents.
Question time!
What kind of food would you have? Would it taste bad? Would it taste good?
Food would be what you could get your hands on.
This is Andrew Pierce from Sovereign Hill, a museum in Ballarat where history comes to life.
It wouldn't be fresh fruit and vegetables, at least not for most people. You'd be eating native animals. Parrot pie and laughing jackass pie, which is going to be kookaburra. And wallabies and kangaroos.
The reason it's funny is because they said jackass pie.
Main kind of food is tea, flour, sugar and particularly mutton. Bringing the sheep in, height of summer, we're talking 30 degrees plus, and meat's just hanging in the open.
Have you seen what happens when you leave food in your lunchbox for a bit too long? Like ham, for example. It's not pretty, is it?
We can look at diary entries talking about the sound of flies. I can't hear who's talking next to me. It's that loud. I wake up, they're all over my face. The blanket is covered in maggots. There's one quote around at least a foot by foot covered in maggots on this blanket.
Ugh, waking up with maggots on your blanket. You know what maggots are, right? They're baby flies and look like creepy, wriggling little worms.
Ew.
Yuck.
Would you stay? How would you go in the camping trip that never ended? Okay, we've reached halfway through the episode. If you'd like to pause now, you can. Hey, if you listened to the first half of this episode and then took a break, let's catch up on what's happened so far.
Hey, history!
We visited Westbourne Grammar and Preshill Primary School in Melbourne and asked them what they knew about the gold rush. Gold fever hit Victoria in 1851. The chance for people to get rich and have more control over their lives. Thousands of men, women and kids from all over the world arrived each week at the goldfields of Ballarat on Wadawurrung country. The sound of gold pans could be heard miles away. And Wadawurrung country got wrecked pretty fast. The miners cut down the trees, dug up the ground, pooed in the rivers and killed kookaburras. For pies. Okay, all caught up? Let's go.
Hey, I'd like to know,
did Aboriginal people mine gold too?
Yeah, great question. So, Aboriginal people all over Australia, going back thousands and thousands of years, lived with gold on their land. In the colonisation of Australia, this gold rock suddenly became worth something.
The first discovery of gold in Victoria is believed to be by a Jajarung boy who was picking up stones to throw at birds for hunting purposes and discovered that he was actually handling a gold nugget. We don't have any evidence of Aboriginal people associating gold as a valuable metal prior to the colonists arriving, but once gold became precious, then Aboriginal people valued it as well. Very quickly, Aboriginal people incorporated gold into their creation stories.
And like everyone else, some got gold fever.
Aboriginal people very quickly, who came from other parts of Australia, if they didn't find gold themselves, quickly found themselves employed by miners, both men and women, for tracking horses and stripping bark and making possum skin rugs and being posties and ferrying them across rivers in their bark canoes. Gold villages were very boring places until Aboriginal people were putting on corroboree performances to entertain. First type of tourism here on the goldfields was by Aboriginal people. There was a lot of interaction, both positive and negative, between the miners and Aboriginal people. Some of it that was negative, due largely to miners not understanding cultural issues such as digging, mining on Aboriginal cremation sites or sacred sites.
What? You mean the gold miners just dug up Aboriginal sacred sites? There were hardly any rules about protecting the environment or these places back then.
Other interactions were very positive in terms of the miners were not taking over Aboriginal lands. They were staying for short periods of time. They usually paid Aboriginal people very well.
So we know there were people from all over the world on the goldfields, but did they all get along? And sometimes, in that rush for gold, there were fights over money and who mined where. People started to get suspicious of each other and treat each other differently.
Hey, can I ask something?
How bad was the discrimination? Like, was it just bad or was it absolutely terrible?
Interesting question. Some groups of people cop this suspicion and discrimination more than others. Meet Gabrielle Wang. Her grandfather was a miner from China.
My great-grandfather's anglicised Chinese name was Chen Ah-Q. He came from a village and apparently the villagers, and this is what often happened in those days, they would pull their money and they'd invest in a young person, you know, who was brave and adventurous. And they invested in my great-grandfather, who was 18, sent him to Australia to dig for gold, we think probably around 1853.
Can you imagine? Your whole family and community saves up all their money to buy you a ticket on a ship to the goldfields. They're hoping that you'll find gold. Yeah, no pressure at all. Cool.
He must have found gold because he became quite successful later on. So people who were sent to Australia, where they sent the money back. So it was like an investment for the village. Chinese worked together a lot like that.
The Chinese miners often worked in organised groups of 30 to 100 men. Working together in big groups meant they often found gold.
And I think that's a lot of the reason why the Western gold miners really hated the Chinese, because the Chinese would work the old diggings that the Western miners had given up, and they'd work together, whereas Western miners basically worked alone, singly. Yeah, a lot of racial prejudice in those days.
And not only that, the government was punishing them, making them pay more with special taxes just for Chinese miners. So we had thousands and thousands of people looking for gold. We had tents everywhere. We had cultures getting on and also not getting on. Is this a recipe for disaster? On the morning of the 3rd of December, 1854, miners woke up to the sound of gunshots and shouting. So many gunshots. At a mining site on the Ballarat goldfields called the Eureka Diggings, it's all happening. On one side, over 100 miners, men and women, behind a big fence. On the other side, almost 300 police and soldiers attack them. The miners fight back. And in 15 minutes, it's over. The miners have lost. At least 22 miners, including one woman and five police, died. This battle is called the Eureka Stockade. Over 100 miners are arrested. 13 miners went to court in Melbourne, but they were all released. And the people of Victoria supported the miners and what they believed in.
Hey, can I ask something?
Why were the police and the miners fighting in the first place? And what were the miners fighting for?
Good question. Sarah van der Waal is from the Eureka Centre, and she knows all about the Eureka Stockade.
The government had a really big problem during the gold rush because the population swelled so quickly that there weren't the resources to actually care for and protect that population on the goldfields, and the government had to pay for the infrastructure that didn't exist.
In the early part of the gold rush, there weren't any government services like public toilets, clean water, roads, and a whole lot more. People were coming to Australia so quickly that the government just couldn't keep up.
And so they came up with a licence fee, a miner's licence, and you had to buy a miner's licence when you came to Ballarat and when you came to work on the goldfields. Now, if you're living in a tent and you're not actually making any money, you're not finding gold, after a couple of years of that, it's going to become really difficult to keep paying that money.
But every miner paid the same licence fee. It didn't matter how much gold they found or didn't find. Do you think that's fair? And then things got a whole lot worse.
The police were out doing licence hunts quite frequently and asking miners to show their licences, and tensions were building on the goldfields. And there were 10,000 miners on the Ballarat goldfields that would come to meetings and protest the fee.
10,000 miners. Those huge protests kept happening. The miners wanted the mining licence fee stopped and other things, like the right to vote. But the Victorian government ignored the miners. So the miners decided their next protest would be even bigger.
They came down to Eureka and they built the stockade. And the stockade had been built to keep the soldiers out, to stop them from coming and doing licence hunts. And 3 days later, the soldiers decided they wanted in and they attacked the stockade. This legacy of Eureka really began on those Ballarat goldfields in 1854.
The miners lost the battle at the Eureka Stockade, but there was change. Within a year, the government got rid of the gold licence, and miners got more rights, like the right to vote. But not all the miners. The new rights didn't go to Chinese or First Nations miners. So while the Eureka Stockade is a key event in democracy and rights in Australia, not everyone got the benefits. But before we finish this episode, we've got to ask,
what's the evidence? How do we really know?
So many different accounts. A lot that's written in newspaper articles at the time. All of the correspondence between the goldfield commissioners who were on the goldfields, the police officers, the governor of Victoria. Lots and lots of journals that we still have. One of the miners wrote a book. It was published in 1855. So Raffaello Carboni's book, and that's online. You can read it online as well. But a lot of it at the end as well is word of mouth, is sort of this really fantastic oral history that's been passed down.
And of course, we can know about gold rush history from the objects that survived, like the actual gold pans that miners used. Gold was found in every state in Australia. Has gold been discovered near you? So, the gold rush is an example of multicultural Australia, where people came together from all over the world with new skills and new ideas, where miners, police, and the government clashed, where people came together to fight for their rights, and where people copped racism and discrimination. So, what would Australia be like if there wasn't a gold rush?
Australia is a very multicultural society, and without that gold rush, it wouldn't have opened all these other cultures. We might not be, as we are, quite a rich country, safe, healthy. This Australia wouldn't be Australia without the gold rushes.
One thing's for sure, it changed Australia forever. And that's one of the reasons why we still talk about it today. You've been listening to Hey History. Check out our learning materials for this episode, designed and road tested by a primary school educator. They're on our website with lots of other resources. Go to heyhistory.net. Hey, have you heard about other episodes of Hey History? You can listen to them in any order. There's The Oldest Classroom, First Meeting in Kamei Botany Bay, and Convict Kids. And a bonus episode for your teacher, How to Talk with Kids About Australian History.
Hey History!
Hey History is made on Gadigal Country by Anna Clark, Claire Wright, Jane Curtis, and Britta Jorgensen. It's endorsed by the History Teachers Association of New South Wales. And your host is me, Axel Clark. Executive producers are Claire Wright and Anna Clark. Claire Wright is Professor of History and Public Engagement at La Trobe University. Anna Clark is Professor of History at the University of Technology, Sydney. Podcast concept, design, and development by Anna Clark. Indigenous cultural consultant is Katrina Thorpe. Story editor is Kyla Slavin. Learning material by Nick Adeney. Thanks to all the students whose voices you hear in this episode, and their schools and teachers. Princess Street Primary School in Sandy Bay, Marrickville West Primary School, Westbourne Grammar School, Presshill Primary School, La Perouse Primary School, and Yirrkala Bilingual School. Hey History is produced by the Australian Centre for Public History and Impact Studios at the University of Technology, Sydney. Impact Studios' executive producer is Sarah Gilbert.